Ramsey TV.
Welcome to the end of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, going to finish the week with a simple but profound message about God counting the cost before he set out on the Aeonian times. We are told by religion that God failed to count the cost. He set forth an amazing universe, an amazing plan. He was so optimistic about everything, but he just did not take into account how stubborn the human race would be. And he ends up with egg on his face, a frickin' omelet. And turns out that the son he sent to save the world, well, he didn't count the cost either. Well, like father, like son, the father doesn't sit down to calculate the cost. The son invests in a shoddy program, and everybody ends up looking foolish. And God becomes the laughing stock of the world. Is this even possible? No, it is not. And yet, the religious world tells us it's not only possible, but that's the way it's going to happen. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Sorry about your luck. Make the best of it. Buck up. We can still worship and extol such a God. But no, we can't. Such a God would be a failure. This is Martin Zender. Welcome to MC TV. Next week, I plan on being back in the studio. I have some unfinished business because we've been last week, possibly even the week before, we talked about the beautiful revelation given to us by Paul. In fact, a secret hidden from the eons in God, that there will be some who will be remaining to the coming of the Lord and whose bodies will be changed in an instant, in the tossing of an eye at the last trump, and they won't have to die. 1 Corinthians 15:51, we shall not all die. And yet still today, in the comment section, someone's still insisting. I don't know why some people just can't get this out of their heads that we're talking about God here. God has a lot of cool tricks and a lot of cool things he can do. And one of them is instantly change mortal bodies to immortal bodies without having to go through either the process of death or the process of somehow shedding the mortal body. Somebody said today, and God bless him, I'm not going to mention names. I don't even know the name. I'm not picking on anybody here except the person who wrote it. I'm definitely picking on them. But really, now come on, think about it. Think about it for a second. If this mortal body needed to be shed, for those who are alive at the coming of Christ, then Paul would have said this mortal body needs shed. Now, ordinarily, that's the case. That's the case. This mortal must put on immortality. But Paul doesn't say in that verse in 1 Corinthians 15 how that necessarily has to happen. This mortal must put on immortality. But actually, in that context, he's talking about those who are alive. Those who are alive. We're still mortal. But it will put on. Our bodies will be changed. You get it? Our bodies. Our failing, soulish, mortal bodies. This body right here will be changed. Well, we've never seen God anything do anything like that. How could it be? Think of who you're talking about here. Oh, it could be that you're thinking of the God painted and described for us by the Christian religion as someone who sets out to build something but is too stupid to count the cost and is taken by surprise by unseen expenses, unanticipated problems, stubborn people. A too smart devil. Yeah, okay. If you're thinking about that God, then yeah, he would have a problem doing what he says he's going to do. And he would have to, a God like that would have to resort to the old school method. You got to die first. You have to have a funeral. You have to have a body. You have to have a rotting corpse. You just have to. Because no one can enter into the celestial realm without going through that step, that ugly, stinky, vomit-inducing step. And yet, I am confident in a God who has counted the cost, who thought it all through before he embarked on what appears to be this madcap scheme of the Aeonian times. But it's not a madcap scheme. It is a perfectly orchestrated production that step by step is working out God's original plan. God never goes to plan B. He's always on plan A. What's that? I don't care how it looks. Of course it looks like he's on plan B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, all the way through the English alphabet and on to the Greek alphabet, then on to the Hebrew alphabet. But he's not. But he's not. Doesn't matter how things look. We walk by faith, not perception. The verse I'm thinking of, the passage, is Luke chapter 14, verse 28, starting. For which of you, this is Jesus telling a parable, for which of you wanting to build a tower is not first seated to calculate the expense to see if he has the wherewithal? Lest at some time he, laying a foundation and not being strong enough to finish up, all those beholding should begin to scoff at him, saying, this man begins building and is not strong enough to finish up. This is exactly what the world says of the Christian God. He looks like a fool. And he looks like a fool because of the way they portray him. The Christian world portrays God as a foolish builder. For which of you wanting to build a tower? Well, God wills certain things. He wants certain things. But the human will is stronger and God can't necessarily get what he wants. But even human beings, God would call and Jesus would call foolish a human being who does not first calculate all the expenses, anticipate all the problems before setting out on a project to see if he has the wherewithal. That is to see if he has the resources to complete the project, to enact his will. Why? This is very real. Possibility here. Why? Because he will be mocked. He will be made fun of and ridiculed. Because all those beholding should begin to scoff at him. Here comes the scoff. Are you ready? This man begins building and is not strong enough to finish up. Notice that word finish. What did our Lord say at the cross? His last words. Second to last words. It is finished. What is finished? The tower, the project. What is the project? Romans 11:36. All is out of God. All exists through God and because of God. All returns to God. Colossians 1:16 through 20, specifically verse 20. That in the fullness of times, God, through the blood of the cross, will reconcile all things to himself. Again, through the blood of the cross. That was the cost of not building a tower. This is just a little bitty, itty bitty human example. God does not build a tower. He builds. I don't even know how to describe what God sat down to start. He builds a playhouse, which is the whole earth. He builds a theater, a stage, where he can bring every member of the human race into it and give them an experience of evil to prepare them for interminable joy that couldn't be had without the evil. And he populates the heavens before he even creates humanity with celestial beings for whom he also plans a good future, a good eternal future. But everything in the meantime has to go to smash, has to be tried and tested through the means of evil so that there will be a contrastive experience for God's creatures, celestial or terrestrial, to come through, so that they will appreciate the eternal happiness and eternal glory that he has for all his creatures. How's that for a project? That's his project. So he sets the stage, the earth and the heavens, and then he makes a time frame, the eons, the aeonian times, and he says, I'm going to have what I call a purpose of the eons, Ephesians 3:11, the purpose of the eons. You know what King James, by the way, do you know what King James translates that, Ephesians 3:11? God's eternal purpose. Man, if there's one verse that proves that eternal is the wrong translation of the Greek adjective aeonian, it's this, an eternal purpose. God continuously purposes. No, an eternal purpose is insanity. An eternal purpose is the plan of a madman. Anyone who has a purpose wants to consummate that purpose, to complete the purpose. And God's purpose is to bring, again, all creation in subjection to himself through Christ. In happiness, in joy, through the agency of necessary evil. And you may think it's a long time. Wow, the evil's going on forever and ever. No, it's not. It's extremely temporary compared to, if you can do this in your head, compare it to true eternity, real eternity, where all creatures will be happy. Small investment of time. The eons are limited. There's five of them. The first eon, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1, Genesis 1:2, the earth became a chaos and vacant. Yet the Spirit of God vibrated on the waters. This was the beginning of Aeon 2. This was the aeon into which Adam was created. Adam was created, we know what happened. No sense going through that tragic tale, except it was purposed, because humanity did not subject itself voluntarily to this realm of sin and death, but by reason of him, God, who subjected it. Adam comes in, Aeon 2, that aeon ends with a flood. When Noah gets off the boat, he comes into a new aeon. That's the aeon we're still in, Aeon 3. Aeon 3 crucified the Son of God. That's how nasty this aeon is. You wonder why you're having a bad day. This is the worst aeon that's ever been. The next aeon is the kingdom aeon, where Israel will rule the world, for the earth, for 1,000 years, headquartered in Jerusalem. In between the end of the kingdom and the beginning of Aeon 5, this present earth is destroyed by fire, and there's a new heavens and a new earth. But at the end of Aeon 5, death is abolished, and God will become all in all. 1 Corinthians 15:28. Now, there's a plan for you. Oh, but we're told that humanity can screw it up. That's right. Us little pipsqueaks down here, dependent upon coffee beans for survival. And we can't even remember appointments that we made today. We can't keep our schedules straight. We have snot in our nose, spit in our mouths, spider webs in our brains, and we can screw up God's plans? This is a sick theory. And yet, we were all taught that in religion. God is first seated to calculate the expense, and the expense was his own son, to see if he has the wherewithal. God creates his son. Jesus came out of God. He's the image of the invisible God. God looks at him, measures him up, scopes him out, puts him on the scale, sees his heart, sees his mind, sees his character, recognizes a lot of himself in his son, as most fathers do, and says, yeah. I did it perfectly. This one will be able to create the eons, and Jesus and God created the eons through Christ, Hebrews. And this one had the wherewithal. That word wherewithal in the parable, it just applies to a stupid human builder. Just a builder. And even an average normal builder will calculate the cost, will finish the project that he starts. He first sits down and sees if he has the wherewithal. Checks his credit, looks at his checkbook. Just the normal things that people do before they build a house or buy a car or even rent an apartment. You have to see if you have the wherewithal. In God's case, the wherewithal was his own son, Jesus Christ. Looked at him and said, yep, I got it. But according to religion, God miscalculated it. He thought he had the wherewithal with Christ. But Christ failed him. He did not. Christ, even though he said it is finished, the project was not finished. And according to the Christian religion, the universe ends in chaos, with a large sector of the universe a shambles, a mess, in control of Satan. Going to talk about Satan here in a second. God had good intentions. He had a magnificent plan, but his Christ was not good enough, because he didn't anticipate a few things, didn't look at his checkbook. What's the equivalent of God's checkbook? He thought he had the funds, thought he had enough money. In other words, he thought that his will could corral the human race into this beautiful plan. But no, he made a huge mistake and gave everybody a free will, and now they are able to thwart his plans. And so his beautiful intention to build a perfect universe got fouled up. Christians say that this universe got fouled up on day one of Adam. Well, maybe day 15, day 30, I don't know. Adam, of course, sinned, and God, of course, goes to plan B. Boy, that's a sad God. That is a very sad God. No, but he had the wherewithal. And he laid the foundation of the universe of Earth, the foundation of the plan, the creation of the eons, his intention from the beginning to bring myriads of creatures into existence in order to give them an experience of evil, in order to redeem them after the experience of evil, and set them up in a glorious, beautiful place for eternity and enjoy fellowship with them. And he is strong enough to. And yet, atheists today, who have more sense, more spiritual acumen than Christians, they scoff at the Christian God. And they say exactly what people say of this stupid builder. This man begins and is not strong enough to finish up. That's what the world says about the Christian God. Only people who have drunk the Kool-Aid in the Christian religion can stand this failure, can swallow the failure, can ignore the failure, and look the failure in the face and call it a success. These people are so brainwashed, so effed up in the head, so emotionally in love with their God that he can do no wrong. He can do no wrong. Oh, sure, he set out to build a tower. Sure, he didn't have enough money. Sure, the tower is sitting over here a quarter of the way done. Sure, all his employees quit and ran away. But we still love him. He's great. He's great. He's great. You're brainwashed, people. You are freaking brainwashed. Even the atheists have more spirituality than you. They can see that, no, that would be a failure. Sorry. That's not a success. That's a failure. Unbelievable. Scoffed. The world scoffs at this failure God. This man begins, is not strong enough. God might have had the intentions, but the one who was not strong enough was Christ. Not strong enough. Christ was not strong enough. Even though he says it is finished, what's finished? The salvation of the world. Oh no, according to this gaggle of religious hypocrites, it's not finished. But they love him anyway, and they worship the failure God. Sick. Verse 31, or what king going to engage another king in battle will not, being seated, first plan? How about that? Plan. There's a concept. Plan to see if he is able to meet with 10,000 him who is coming against him with 20,000. Oh, ho, 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 ho. Let me, verse 32. Otherwise, surely, at his being still at a distance, he, dispatching an embassy, is asking the terms of peace. Because he looks at the enemy and sees they have double the forces we have. We can't do it. That's a stupid king. That's a failure of a king. Lincoln fired generals in the Civil War who did crap like this. McClellan, General McClellan. Lincoln hated that guy. He screwed up many battles. Get that guy out of here. He did not sit down and first plan to see if he's able to meet with 10,000, him who's coming against him with 20,000. You have to have some tricks up your sleeve to beat a bigger enemy. I'm thinking of David and Goliath. Goliath was way, way, way stronger than David. But David calculated. David did have a plan. And the plan was the Spirit of God. He knew that with the Spirit of God in him was more than enough to defeat the champion of the Philistines, who was 9'9", smelled like a freaking landfill. And his spearhead weighed like 18 pounds, something like that. Jesus Christ at the cross, naked, pinned to a Roman stake, against every single principality and power of darkness, the sovereignties, the authorities, and the world mights. And what does he end up doing? Making a show of them openly. Because wouldn't it have been embarrassing if they had beaten him? And you know what would have happened if they had beaten him? He never would have raised from the dead. Jesus Christ's resurrection from the dead is the guarantee that God approved, that Jesus Christ did complete, indeed did finish God's plan. It's signed and sealed. It only remains now to be delivered. And it will be delivered. So God creates an adversary, Satan. And he's going to engage this other king. God creates a king to battle against so that we can see God's character. That's why novelists and screenwriters and playwrights, they all have protagonists and antagonists. They create the antagonist so that their protagonist can shine against them. And if it's a good novel, if it's a good movie, if it's a good play, they make the antagonist bigger and better and stronger. And so the protagonist has to be crafty, has to be sly, has to be intelligent, has to have a better plan. And God's plan is to fight evil with spirit, not with flesh, not with the strength of flesh, with spirit. That is a plan. And we saw the microcosm of it with David versus Goliath. That's it. That's the whole thing in a microcosm. Okay, you want to see it macrocosmically? Look at the cross. That's David and Goliath again. It's a repeat. Same thing God's doing all the time. Defeating a greater enemy with a tiny little small enemy that looks weak to prove that it's spirit, not flesh, that conquers evil. And so Jesus Christ on the cross, what a disadvantage. Could you put a man at a greater disadvantage against this awesome, scary adversary? No, you can't. And yet who wins? Jesus Christ wins. He made an open show of the principalities and powers who thought it was their idea to put him on the cross. No, it was God's idea. It was God's idea. They were just subserving God's greater plan. They put him on. And now us. We're little. We're a small group. We're a weak group. We're a discouraged group. We're sometimes a shaky faith group. And yet, if the template is true, and if God indeed is in a big, fat, hairy, glorious, predictable rut, as I've claimed for years that he is, then according to the template, we are going to win. We are going to win because when God began this battle, he sat down to see if he was able to meet with the unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid, with little bitty David, with no armor, with Jesus Christ pinned naked to a Roman cross, if he was able to meet him who was coming against him with a giant, flesh-energized army. Does the spirit beat the flesh? Every freaking time, ladies and gentlemen. Every freaking time. And when this happens, God looks so wise. And it comes to pass that he had a plan the whole time.